Fascism is known as an ideology that was born and flourished in the 20th century. Yet the roots of this ideology, which exalted war and violence, in fact go back to ancient times, to Sparta. It spread rapidly across the world in the wake of World War I, with fascist regimes coming to power in Germany and Italy in particular, but also in such countries as Spain and Japan. Because of fascism, the people of these countries suffered terribly and were subjected to frightful savagery. The fascist dictators and their administrations heading such systems, where brute force, aggression, bloodshed and violence were the rule of the day, sent waves of terror throughout the society with their secret police and fascist militia paralyzing the people with fear. Furthermore, fascist administration was implemented in almost all levels of society, from education to culture, religion to art, the governmental structure to the military system, and from the policing organizations to people's private lives. Ultimately, World War II, initiated by fascists, was one of the gravest calamities in the history of mankind, leaving as many as 55 million dead. In this film, as well as the familiar story of fascism, we shall also be looking at two other aspects which have not been sufficiently emphasized. The first of these is the way that the origins of fascist ideology rest on old pagan cultures. As we shall be seeing, fascism is an ideology which seeks to replace the moral values of the divine religions with pagan barbarism. Pagan savagery, which reached from the ancient Greek state of Sparta to the pre-Islamic Arabs, was resurrected with fascism. Another important aspect of fascism is its link to Darwin's theory of evolution, which has formed the basis of various aggressive ideologies all over the world, from the 19th century up to the present day. Darwinism is in fact an unscientific dogma, which portrayed such perverted ideas as man is a developed animal, some races have been left behind in the evolutionary process, and there is a fight to death for survival in nature in which the strong conquer and the weak are eliminated as scientific facts, and thus constituted the basis of fascism. Let us now discover the secret history of the bloody ideology known as fascism, which was responsible for one of the greatest savageries of our time. Munich in 1918 was the scene of enormous upheaval. Germany had emerged defeated from the First World War and was going through a social crisis. This upheaval led to a revolt against the government. Kurt Eisner, a journalist of Jewish origins, and his social democrat followers carried out a bloodless coup with the support of the imperial army. Ludwig III and his family were sent into exile. Eisner became prime minister of the new government. However, those who imagined that this revolution, achieved without bloodshed, would bring stability to Germany were sadly disappointed. A secret society called the Thule Society became the new government's first enemy. This was a deeply racist organization which took its name from Thule, in Nordic mythology the legendary kingdom whence came the ancient Germanic peoples, and was founded in 1918 by Rudolf von Sebettendorf. In setting up the Thule Society, Sebottendorf's racist ideas had been shaped by three ideologues who had devoted themselves to mysticism: Madame Blavatsky, Guido von Liszt, and Adolf Lanz. Madame Blavatsky developed a theory that the Aryan race, which she believed to be the ancestor of the German people, was an allegedly superior race. According to this theory, one civilization had ruled the world thousands of years before the civilizations of ancient Egypt and Mesopotamia. Atlantis. Blavatsky thought that this people were members of a very noble and pure race, but that they had been wiped from the face of the earth by a volcanic disaster. In her view, those who survived the disaster were scattered all over the world, as a result of which the Aryans intermingled with other races. In order to find evidence for her mystical myths, Blavatsky traveled as far as Tibet and studied Buddhist priests. One symbol she used on the cover of her book, The Secret Doctrine, was particularly striking: the swastika. Guido von Liszt thought along the same lines as Blavatsky. In his view, the German race were actually the representatives of the so-called Aryan race suggested by Blavatsky. Liszt also came up with another claim. Throughout the course of history, there had been secret societies which sought to continue and protect the culture of the Aryan race. The Freemasons, the Knights Templars, and the Rosicrucians. In 1912, he founded a secret society, similar to Freemasonry, called the German Order. Liszt died in 1919, but he left behind an admirer who would continue his ideas with the greatest zeal: Master of the German Order, Adolf Lanz. In 1899, Lanz had founded a cult known as the New Templars and declared himself to be the Grand Master. Thus it was that he combined the characteristics of the Knights Templars with zealous racism. In 1905, he began publishing the anti-Semitic magazine Ostara to spread his racist ideas. In one article, Lanz claimed that members of the master race sat differently from other people, and even had a different foot structure. According to Lanz's superstitious belief, there was a so-called fight for survival between yellow and black, a struggle which yellow had to win at all costs. Right from the first edition of the magazine, Sebattendorf, the future founder of the Thule Society, was there among his followers and the proponents of the ideology he had infected them with. Sebattendorf, a member of the German Order, was a Freemason. Thus it was that mysticism, racism, admiration for old pagan cultures, and a hierarchical organization similar to that of Freemasonry all came together. In effect, this was the birth of Nazism. The ideology of the Thule Society was built on resurrecting pre-Christian pagan German culture. Within that ideology, the elimination of non-Aryan races assumed a similar importance. Heading the list were the blacks, gypsies, and Jews. These words from one of the Thule Society's publications are an indication of this. Arrest the Jews, That will bring peace to our country. That is why the Thule leader Sebottendorf refused to accept the chancellorship of Kurt Eisner, one of the Jews he regarded as the eternal foe. He stated this quite openly. Yesterday we witnessed the destruction of all that we believe in and attach importance to. Instead of princes with whom we share a blood bond, our deadly enemies rule, the Jews. We cannot know what will be born out of such chaos. So long as I hold the iron hammer, I shall lead Thule to war. Our discipline is Germanic discipline, and Germanic means nobility. Our god is Wallvather. Our emblem is Aryan, the first flame, the sun, the eagle. From today our symbol shall be the eagle. It will remind us that we may have to die if we are to live. The Thule militia thus armed themselves and rose up against the government. Yet their attempts to remove Eisner from power ended in failure. The streets turned into a battlefield of minor skirmishes. For the Thule leadership, this was actually a dress rehearsal of what would happen in the future. The great majority of the membership of the Thule Society joined the Nazi Party, established in 1920. The founder of the party was an individual charged with monitoring meetings as an army spy, Adolf Hitler. Yet the Thule meetings, which he first began attending as a visitor, made a deep impression on him. Pagan mythology and the theory of the master race had an immediate effect on Hitler and came to form his worldview. As a result, he founded the Nazi Party from a branch of the Thule Society. Important members of the Thule Society assumed key positions in the party. Rudolf Hess, Dietrich Eckhart, Alfred Rosenberg, and Adolf Hitler. The darkness that would enshroud the whole world was slowly growing. The Nazi Party was founded with the regrowth of the superstitious beliefs of pagan religions. In the years which followed, the party's mystic research would be directed by Heinrich Himmler. Himmler literally inhabited a fantasy world. He so believed in the legend of Atlantis that in 1939 he sent German researchers to Tibet and Peru. The German scientists were charged with finding traces of Atlantis. Wherever they went, the Germans measured and recorded skull sizes, lengths of the hands and feet, and the eye and skin colors of the local people. This practice would soon be implemented in all those European countries which fell under the Nazis' heel. The foundations of catastrophe had been laid. As the second most important figure in the Nazi Party, Heinrich Himmler directed the project of resurrecting pagan German culture in person. He believed that he had been reincarnated and that in his previous life he had been King Heinrich I. Heinrich I was the legendary king who had saved the German tribes from the threat from the east. Quedlinburg Cathedral, which housed the king's tomb, was declared a sacred site by the Nazis. Strange rituals were performed every year on the day regarded as the king's birthday. Himmler claimed that he had seen the king in a dream and that he had shown him the way in his difficult task. The ritual was ended at the stroke of midnight when Himmler attempted to rejoin his so-called former soul by having himself locked in the black dungeons underneath the cathedral. This was the sickly mentality which ran the Nazi Party, which came to be strong enough to alter the course of German and world history. As the Nazis gained in strength, the efforts to return to pre-Christian pagan German culture were stepped up. Pagan temples were established in many parts of Germany and made training areas for officers. Aryan ideology and mysticism formed the basis of that training. Ceremonies were held in the accompaniment of traditional Germanic battle horns, and the soldiers sought to protect themselves from evil spirits by lighting giant fires. The brainwashed Nazis lost all touch with reality and believed in such nonsense as that spirits thousands of years old would emerge from the flames. Similar perverted rituals, displays, and brainwashing methods would continue throughout the course of the Nazi regime. One interesting example of fascism's efforts to brainwash society were the book burning ceremonies. The first of these took place on May 10, 1933. Brainwashed German university students gathered in Berlin and other major German cities to burn books whose ideas they disapproved of. Thousands of books were burned to the accompaniment of Nazi salutes, songs, and military music. The fascist state permitted only its own ideology to be taught. Outside of that, nobody must be allowed to think anything else, or else he would be punished, have his books burned, or be silenced in the harshest way possible. Much research has been carried out into, and a great many books written about, the symbols used by Nazi ideology. The results of that research have clearly revealed that the mystic mythology we have been looking at constituted the basis of the ideology. The best known Nazi symbol is the swastika, the symbol of the party itself. Yet the swastika was not the party's own discovery, neither was it a new discovery at all. This pagan symbol, frequently used by Adolf Lanz in his magazine Ostara, was adopted by the Nazis who followed the magazine, and was chosen as their official symbol. In the years that followed, Nazi officers who totally identified with that symbol would use it everywhere, from wall decorations to signet rings. The ceremonies in which ancient pagan culture was revived with such perversion were turned into giant rituals. A war between the dwarves and the giants constituted an important part of the legend of Atlantis. Giant structures were therefore erected. German artists were made to build giant statues. Hitler's architects designed this area in which 500,000 people could stage rallies. Hitler would spend time in front of the models of giant residences which filled his dreams and perpetuated his dreams of Atlantis. A model of a 220-meter giant dome planned to be erected in Berlin. As the Nazis erected their giant residences, statues, and stadiums on the one hand, on the other, they began to translate their dark ideologies into life. The idea of the widest ranging and most ruthless slaughter in the history of the world was about to be put into practice. The alleged scientific theory behind that genocide had been put forward a century before. We have so far seen how Nazism was based on a pagan belief. However, the Nazis claimed that their ideology was supported by modern science. The element which most encouraged them in that regard was Darwin's theory of evolution. Darwinism, which is still today regarded as a scientific opinion by some people, was actually nothing more than a repetition of a series of claims made by atheist philosophers in ancient Greece. Darwin's views concerning human beings and human races in particular were totally compatible with superstitious pagan beliefs. According to Darwin's twisted claim, man was a species of animal, and the only way for him to progress was through conflict. Again, according to Darwin, the human races were at different levels of evolution, and conflict was inevitable. Scientific discoveries would later reveal that these claims were entirely false. But these discoveries had not yet been made at the beginning of the 20th century. It was on this foundation of ignorance that the Nazis' unstoppable rise took place. The Origin of Species was published in England in 1859. The author was Charles Darwin. In his book, Darwin attempted to explain the origin of life and maintained that all living things had evolved from a common ancestor. Another claim was that a selfish and ruthless fight for survival prevailed amongst living things. The name of his book clearly revealed his ideas. The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. Darwin's book, The Descent of Man, on the other hand, contained a thoroughgoing racism. In his view, some races were more evolved and advanced than others. Asians, Turks, and blacks were almost at the same level as apes. Furthermore, according to the laws of evolution, the weak would be eliminated. Darwin devoted the opening chapters of his book to the subject of animal breeding. He wrote that in order to raise productive breeds of horse, only healthy lions should be allowed to breed down the generations. He would go even further in The Descent of Man and suggest that this method could also be applied to human beings. Regarding human beings as a species of animal, Darwin thought that they could be improved in the same way as animals. It would later be realized that these ideas of Darwin's were completely false. Yet few people were aware of this, given the primitive level of science at the time. At that same time, a fierce admirer and follower of Darwin emerged. This was Darwin's nephew, Francis Galton. In his autobiography, Memories of My Life, he writes, "The publication in 1859 of The Origin of Species by Charles Darwin made a marked epoch in my own mental development, as it did in that of human thought generally. Its effect was to demolish a multitude of dogmatic barriers by a single stroke, and to arouse a spirit of rebellion against all ancient authorities whose positive and unauthenticated statements were contradicted by modern science." The concepts that Galton denigrated as dogmatic barriers and ancient authorities were religious systems and beliefs. Galton first published his racist ideas in 1869 in his book, Hereditary Genius. In this book, he maintained that the English nation had an inherently superior blood to other nations. In Galton's view, measures needed to be taken to protect that blood. In this way, a most superior human race could be produced. In order to find a name for this racist evolutionist theory, Galton looked to the pagan world, where his theory had once been put into practice. It was he who came up with and spread the word eugenics, meaning good birth in Greek. Given the primitive level of scientific understanding at the time, the idea of eugenics soon acquired widespread support. The Eugenics Education Society was established in 1907. Based at the Statistics Department of University College London, in 1926, the name was simplified and it became the Eugenics Society. The Eugenics Society maintained that all handicapped people in society should be sterilized. The society praised the members of the aristocracy and the royal family, but regarded the members of other races as an undeveloped species of animal. Charles Darwin's son, Leonard Darwin, was president of the organization between 1911 and 1928, and its most active member. After Great Britain, eugenics began to attract supporters in the United States. Evolutionist circles there carried out a great deal of propaganda on the subject in the 1920s and 30s. Certain states passed the laws known as sterilization laws. At that same time, parallel developments were taking place in Europe. Yet nobody at the time was aware that these developments would later turn into an unbelievable slaughter. Eugenics, the foundations of which were laid by pagan barbarian tribes, and which was later attempted to be spread and placed on an alleged scientific footing by Charles Darwin and his nephew Francis Galton, was actually a terrible crime against humanity. The sterilization laws passed in the USA in the 1920s as a result of a wide-ranging propaganda campaign are today regarded by the citizens of that same country as a shameful example of racism. What is more, it has now been proved that the theory of eugenics is a superstition, totally at variance with the scientific facts. The recent Human Genome Project has shown that the genetic differences between races and individuals are very small, and that it is baseless to even attempt to construct any reproduction policy based on them. Human races were created equal by God. In the Quran, God says, "Mankind, we created you from a male and female, and made you into peoples and tribes so that you might come to know each other. The noblest among you in God's sight is that one of you who best performs his duty. God is all-knowing, all-aware." Quran 49:13. The weak and genetically sick must be treated with affection and compassion, protected and nurtured. But instead of this approach, revealed to us by God as a religious moral duty, the Western world at the beginning of the 20th century turned to eugenics, a product of paganism and the theory of evolution. The scale of the savagery that this pagan evolutionary theory led to will be revealed when we consider the case of Germany. In order to do this, we need to examine the men of ideas produced by Germany in recent times. Heading the list of those who laid the foundations of fascism is the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. Nietzsche's publisher, Peter Gast, called Nietzsche one of the fiercest anti-Christians and atheists. Nietzsche had a particular hatred of the ethical views of Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. In his opinion, concepts such as love, compassion, and humility must be abandoned and replaced with a so-called master morality, which accepted the warlike and ruthless state of nature. In Thus Spake Zarathustra, he wrote, "Of all that is written, I love only what a man has written with his blood. Write with blood, and you will experience that blood is spirit." Nietzsche was also a racist. He maintained that one part of mankind was composed of Superman and that the others had to serve and obey them. Nietzsche's racist ideas with their tendency towards violence bore a great similarity to those of another contemporary ideologue, Charles Darwin. In his book, Darwin's Dangerous Idea, Daniel C. Dennett describes Darwin's influence on Nietzsche in the following way. Friedrich Nietzsche saw an even more cosmic message in Darwin. If Nietzsche is the father of existentialism, then perhaps Darwin deserves the title of grandfather. Nietzsche, so deeply influenced by Darwinism, had a major influence on Nazi ideology with the racist ideas he held. Adolf Hitler had a monument erected in his memory and laid the foundations of an education center and library where German youth could be taught Nietzsche's doctrine of a master race. Nietzsche's life was no less dark than his philosophy. He suffered a mental illness at the age of 44, and that worsening disease led to his death from insanity. That deterrent fate recalls the fate of all those who have denied God down the ages. Do not let those who rush headlong into disbelief sadden you. They do not harm God in any way. God desires to assign no portion to them in the hereafter. They will have a terrible punishment. Those who sell belief for disbelief do not harm God in any way. They will have a painful punishment. Those who disbelieve should not imagine that the extra time we grant to them is good for them. We only allow them more time so they will increase in evil doing. They will have a humiliating punishment. After Friedrich Nietzsche, Germany's best-known Darwinist and most fanatical supporter of eugenics was the zoologist Ernst Haeckel. According to his unscientific theory, every creature relives the alleged process of evolution experienced by its ancestors as it develops in the mother's body. In order to support his theory, he made a number of drawings of embryos. However, it would be revealed in the years which followed that these drawings contained deliberate distortions and that his theory was nothing but a scientific forgery. Another instance of Haeckel's erroneous science is the theory of eugenics. He adopted the theory from such names as Charles Darwin, Francis Galton, and Leonard Darwin, and took it further by suggesting a return to the Spartan model of ancient Greece. In other words, to murdering newborn infants. In his book, Wonders of Life, Haeckel proposed the destruction of abnormal newborn infants without hesitation. Haeckel wanted all sick and handicapped people who constituted an obstacle to the so-called evolution of society to be weeded out as a requirement of the laws of evolution. He opposed treatment for the sick, claiming that this obstructed the workings of natural selection. He complained that hundreds of thousands of incurables, lunatics, lepers, people with cancer, and so on, are artificially kept alive in our modern communities without the slightest profit to themselves or the general body. He further recommended that a commission should be set up to decide the fate of individuals. Upon the decision of the commission, he suggested the redemption from evil should be accomplished by a dose of some painless and rapid poison. This barbarism, upon which Haeckel built his theory, was to be put into practice in Nazi Germany. So far in this film, we have witnessed the laying of the foundations of fascism. This philosophy of savagery, which goes back to the pagan tribes of the past, combined with the theory of evolution and a thoroughgoing racism in the 19th century, to produce a truly terrible ideology. The only value fascism holds sacred is strength. The strong have the right to rise to the top and crush the weak. Fascists greatly admire the strong, but hate and despise the weak. The fundamental principles of this perverted philosophy are waging war, shedding blood, ruthlessness, and cruelty. Against this perverted mentality that emerged in Sparta, in the arenas of the Roman Empire, and in the pagan barbarian tribes from the north of Europe, there is the beautiful morality God has revealed to us by means of religion. According to the moral values of religion, what matters is not strength, but truth. Human beings must be judged by whether or not they conform to what God has revealed as the truth, not by their strength. The strong are charged with being gentle and compassionate to the weak, not crushing and oppressing them. A human being's duty is to protect the weak and be merciful and peace-loving, not to be cruel and ruthless. In our next film, we shall be looking at the conditions under which fascism seized power in Germany and what that seizure led to. We shall watch with horror the slaughter to which the twisted idea of the Aryan race led, and we'll see how this perverted ideology cast a shadow over the whole world. We shall also witness how this philosophy of savagery was believed to have been finished at the end of the Second World War, but how it actually survived and is growing stronger day by day. We will set out the killings by fascist politicians and regimes from Africa to Europe, and will also reveal the solution to this dark ideology which menaces the entire world.